Good evening. My name is Roseanne, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Roseanne.
And I first want to thank Damien for the privilege for and the honor of coming here and asking me to speak tonight. So thank you, Damien. What I'm going to do is tell you a little bit about what it was like before I got sober, how I got sober, and how I've been able to stay sober. But I want to preface it with everything that I share from this point on is strictly my opinion, my personal experience, strength, and hope. If you want to know the truth, go to the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. That'll tell you it. Okay. Disclaimers everywhere. You think I'm in the legal profession? Anyway, my sponsor always gives the statistics first, and that's what I'm going to do. So when I got sober, I was 29 years old. My sobriety date is March 1, 1987. That means I have 26 years of sobriety, so you don't have to count. I'm 55 years old. I have two older brothers, an older sister, and a younger half-sister. Let's see. I have a sponsor. Her name is Willa. She has 38 years of sobriety. She has a sponsor. Her name is Betty. She has 41 years of sobriety. And I sponsor women, and they sponsor women. And so it is carried on. And I love Alcoholics Anonymous. Anyway, when I can tell you this. I can't tell you the exact time that I actually took a drink. It was somewhere around 13 years old, I think. But what I can tell you is how it made me feel. Because I felt prettier than, I felt better than, I could say things that I would not ordinarily be able to say. And I was like a different person. Boy, was I different. And the problem was I always went over that line, that just one drink too much. And I was a blackout drinker, I was a daily drinker, and I was a throw-up drinker. It was nice. Well, I'll back up just a little bit. Both of my parents have been married four times each. That means we had a lot of parents running around our family. And I don't blame my alcoholism on anybody or anything. I'm an alcoholic because I'm an alcoholic. I walked in the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous. I did not go to a rehab. I've been sober since the day I walked in to the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous. I haven't had a drink since March 1, 1987, and I'm very, very grateful for that. What I will tell you is that my dad was always a practicing alcoholic, and my mom, I wish she was, because there would be hope, but it's all right. I was born up in Northern California, moved down to Southern California when I was about 11 years old. My mom decided that my two brothers were getting into a little bit too much trouble in the San Fernando Valley, so she moved us up to Lake Tahoe. And that's where I learned that wherever you go, there you are, because you're still going to get in trouble. You're still going to find that stuff. And so I went to South Tahoe Intermediate School, and I graduated, and it lasted about a year and a half, 2 years I worked for him, and then I decided I wanted to go out into the real world. And so I went to this insurance company and started working there, and while I was there, I met him. He drank like I drank, and we had a lot of fun. We didn't go anywhere that you couldn't have alcohol. It was just the way we did it. We dated for about 4.5 years, and one of the things about him is that both of his parents died as a direct result of the disease of alcoholism. And he didn't want to be an alcoholic, and I didn't want to be an alcoholic because my dad was one. I just didn't drink any yellow liquor. My dad drank scotch. And so what we decided we were going to do is if we didn't drink for 1 month out of the year, then we weren't alcoholic. So we chose the month of February. Shortest month of the year. You didn't think we were going to choose like December, do you? So we dated for a while, and after 4.5 years, you know, we got into these great big like arguments because we were both alcoholic, and my stepmother number four, she was at the time about 20 years in Al-Anon. She's now been in Al-Anon for about 44 years. And I absolutely love her. And she kept on telling me to go to Al-Anon. And what happened was, one night, I said, "That's it. I'm done. I'm not going to be in this relationship anymore." And so I did the next indicated thing that we do when we be alcoholic, and I married him. And so we got married, and I was in a blackout. I don't know if any of you have ever come out of a blackout in the middle of it, but it's a very interesting experience. Because I couldn't tell you really what happened before, except for I was really drunk. Evidently I was mad at him. And he put his arm up to block me. We were in the kitchen. And for some reason, I went to go hit him with both my arms. I never think that I can drink like a lady. All I have to do is look at my hand. And that reminds me what type of a drinker that I really am. And because I can't have just one. I don't do just one. So go on down the line. And 8 months later, I find out that I'm pregnant. And so I say to my then husband, let's stop drinking. You know, I'm pregnant. And he looked at me and he said, "You're pregnant. I'm not. You quit." So I went to Al-Anon. And because my stepmother kept on telling me to go, and I thought, well, he's the problem. I'm not the problem. You know, I could do this. And so during that time, it's the only time I've ever been able to do it, never before, never after. I drank one glass of wine every Saturday night. All I know is that it's the grace of God. And you're going to hear me talk about God a lot. God is my higher power. And I do believe that God did for me what I couldn't do for myself at that time. So I went to this meeting Friday nights at University in Culver. It was an Al-Anon meeting, and I sat in there and I listened. I didn't share. I didn't talk to very many people, and I left after the meeting, and that was it. And I only went to that one meeting every week. And once I gave birth to my son, I stopped going to that meeting. But there was one thing that was going on every single night. After a couple months, I finally turned to the girl next to me, because there's this laughing and this partying and they're having all this fun. I mean, you could just hear the fun right next door. And so I finally turned to the girl next to me and I said, "What is going on there?" And she looked at me very seriously and she said, "Oh, those are the alcoholics. They always have fun." I'm going through the same amount of bottles of wine. I'm having the same blackouts. And I'm the only one with my little 2-year-old son. And that's faith and hope, because they've gone through the same thing. So I turned to her and I said, "Well, how many years of sobriety do you have?" And she said, 8.5 years. And I said, "Oh, have you ever worked the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous?" She assured me that she had. So I asked her to be my temporary sponsor, because I wasn't sure that, like, this is going to be permanent. What if I don't like her? I don't know. So I started calling her every day, because everything was a big, huge deal. Everything. Drama all over the place. And she didn't tell me to call her every day. I just did. So after a couple months, I'm thinking, yeah, I think just once she could call me. I'm just saying. Be nice. What I learned from that is that she wanted to see what lengths I would go to in order to stay sober. And I love that. And she told me, she asked me to do some things. She always suggested. She never demanded anything. And that's what I do. I suggest, because you know what? What I learned is you have to learn how to live. Drinking was a symptom to my problem. It was not my problem. It was the symptom. My real problem was living in this world the way it is, and with my little brain. My brain can go from a committee to a convention in a nanosecond. It doesn't take much. I'm just saying. So first thing she had me do, she asked me to write a list of 30 things that I was powerless over and 3 things that were unmanageable in my life. And what I learned from that experience is that You see, I thought I had power over all types of things until I wrote that list. And then I found that I didn't. And I found that there were really some big things that were unmanageable in my life that I didn't really think at the time that were unmanageable in the beginning. And the reason that she did that is that I had to understand what the word powerlessness meant in order to work step one, in order to admit that I'm powerless over alcohol and that my life has become unmanageable. I better know what it means. And so I did that, and I'm so grateful that I did. And I found that the only thing that I have power over is my attitude. But even with that, I have to go to God and ask Him to redirect my thinking, because my attitude can be bad. And so I need Him to redirect my thinking. And then she asked me to read the big book. And she said, Roseanne, I don't want you to start on the first page. I'm special. I don't have to start on page one. Table of contents. Start in the table of contents. And then I want you to read the first foreword, the second foreword, the third foreword, the doctor's opinion, and Bill's story. And when you get to the end of that, that's step one. And then I want you to go over to the 12 and 12. And I want you to read step one out of the 12 and 12. And when you're done with that, you've read both of those, then you sit down and you write what step one means to you. All right. So I did. She said, always read with a highlighter. Because if anything sticks out, you want to highlight that. You should see my big book. So I did that, and I really did learn that I am powerless over alcohol and that my life has become unmanageable. For step two, same thing. Read out of the big book, read out of the 12 and 12, and write what step two means to me. And I will tell you that what I learned is if I continue to do the same behavior and expect different results, I'm totally insane. But if I change my behavior, so will the results change. And I'm not talking about big changes, because big changes are big. I'm talking about the little changes. I had to start making my bed every day so that when I came home, I liked being in my little apartment. It's the little things, not the big ones. That's where it starts. And so I would do that. And when it came to the third step, where I love the third step prayer. God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. Amen. Thank you. Because here's the thing. See that bondage of self, you know? I get so into that. I can get so into myself that I can't see the forest through the trees. I didn't have a problem with God when I came in. I mean, there's a difference between religiosity and spirituality, and they can coexist. And I know people have problems with one or the other. And if you have a problem with spirituality, this program is going to be tough for you because this is a spiritual program. The religiosity can be a great companion, accompaniment to the spirituality. Religiously, I was raised Jewish. I had my bat mitzvah at 17, you know, all that stuff. So I didn't really have a problem with God. But what I learned is coming into Alcoholics Anonymous, I learned about a whole nother God. I mean, I learned about a God, a really understanding, loving God. And so the third step, same thing. I had to read out of the big book, read out of the 12 and 12, write about it. And then we get to the fourth step. Okay, so when I first did the fourth step, I read it. I didn't understand it. I read it again. I didn't understand it. I read it again. I didn't understand it. I said, I don't understand what to do. She goes, just do it. You're making it so complicated. She goes, this is a very simple program for very complicated people. So, you know, you don't have to complicate it. Just keep it simple. Draw the four columns. And what I learned to do is it's not only about the what we've done. It's also about the good stuff we have. You know, I'd write a list of everyone who ever loved me and that I ever loved in my life. I'd write about the good things, the good trips, you know, all kinds of things. Because when you take an inventory, you're counting what you have and what you don't have. It's not just all negative. There's the negative and the positive. What you need, what you don't need. And so I was able to do that, and I got through that. And going through the fifth step, I'm thinking, okay, I thought I just had to hand it to her, and she'd read it and get back to me. I didn't know I had to sit across from her and actually read the thing. And but what I found is that by doing that, she was able to share her experience, strength, and hope with me. And I found that I was not as bad as I thought I was, as I had perceived it. And, you know, I can point out everybody else's character defects. I just can't point out my own. And I think a lot of us are like that, where it's very easy to see everybody else's. And again, I had to read out of the 12 and 12, read out of the big book on every single step. And when it came time to the sixth step, I'm thinking, are you kidding? This is a nanosecond step. It's one paragraph out of the big book. It's the shortest chapter in the 12 and 12. Can't be a hard step. Longest working step I've ever done. Because it says, we were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. You have to know what your defects of character are before you can become entirely ready to have them removed. So one of the things that I found, one of the tools, and I do it, the way I do it with the girls that I sponsor today is different than the way it was done with me. So I'm just going to tell you my way. Because it works better. And I'm up here. So what I found is the reason why you do a fourth step, you know, the four columns, who is it? What happened? How did it make me feel? What's my part? A lot of times we can't figure out what's my part. And a sponsor helps with that. And because they have more discernment than we do. And at the time. And so what I do is I'll write down all kinds of things while they're sharing their four step with me. And at the end, you have all the character defects. You have to agree on the character defects that they, you know, what they actually are. So I'm just going to tell you one of mine because this is about me. And the character defect is, let's say it's dishonesty. So what I have them do is on 3x5 cards, write down on one side of the card, dishonesty, and on the other side of the card, honesty. And take all my character defects and turn them upside down and shuffle them up and say, God, would you please show me just for today what character defect you'd like me to work on? And I choose one card and I look at the card and it's honesty and dishonesty. And all throughout the day I ask God, okay, God, please show me where I'm honest and please show me where I'm dishonest. I thought I was really honest. I'm cash register honest. There was a lot of dishonesty that I was going through, a lot of stuff, and I didn't know it till I did that process. And because I could see the good and the bad, at the end of the day, I say, okay, God, where was I honest and where was I dishonest? Because I have to be able to see it. And so you go through that process, also, you know, reading and writing out of the big book and the 12 and 12, and I think that took me 9 months to work that step. But it's one of the greatest steps that I ever worked because, and I'd love to tell you that I don't have any character defects anymore, but I can't say that because I do. And I love step 7 where, you know, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. It originally read, humbly on our knees, asked God to remove our shortcomings. And you know what? That is the step of humility. And, you know, I've learned so much about the shortcomings that I have and the character defects and how I react or respond to them. And I've learned that it's a choice. I have a choice every day. I've learned in here that everything I experience is a lesson or a gift. If I look at it any other way, I'm going to become a victim. And if I become a victim, then it's pour me, pour me, pour me another drink because I just can't take it. And, you know, I have to face the stuff that I go through every day. And I would love to tell you that I'm perfect today and I'm not. Step eight, we start with the fourth step, where we list all the people we need to make amends to. And just because somebody's on our fourth step doesn't necessarily mean we have to make amends to them. That's what I learned for me. And so I started the list from there, and there were people that were on that weren't on that fourth step that I needed to make amends to. And some people I was able to do a face-to-face amends. Some people I had to write letters to. Some people I had to make a payment to a charity or do some work for somebody else because I didn't know where the person was. I had to write letters, things like that. But I just had to make the list. That was all that was required of me in step eight, and read out of the 12 and 12 and read out of the big book. Step nine is the one step that I've seen more women that I sponsor go out on, because there's two parts to that step. The first part is to stop doing what you're doing, and the other part is to acknowledge that. It doesn't mean rehash everything you did. It just means you have to make your amends. The word amend means to change. And if you haven't done it, you haven't done it. So if I make an amends to somebody but I continue the same behavior, I haven't really made an amends. And that's the stuff I had to look out for me. And that was a hard step because not everybody accepted my amends. And I have to live with that because of it's part of the consequences of the things that I did when I was drinking. And I'm okay with that today because I've made peace with it. Step 10, I love step 10. In the 12 and 12, step 10 talks about the spiritual axiom. And it said the spiritual axiom is that whenever I am bothered by anything, I have to look at myself. Because it's not them, it's me. I have to look at myself three times as much as I'm looking at anybody else when I'm all upset about something that somebody is doing or a situation or whatever. Because when I'm pointing my finger, there's always three pointing back at me. And I'm grateful for that stuff. I wish it read, when we realized we were wrong, we promptly admitted it. I don't always promptly realize it. But when I do realize it, I do make amends and I do change my behavior because that's what I was taught to do. I've learned to be of service in Alcoholics Anonymous. Step 11, I love step 11. It's probably my favorite step. It's the one step that I think radically changed my life more than any other step. And this, there is religiosity in this that I'm going to share about because this is the time that I became a Christian. Because I learned about a God that was such a loving God. And what I learned is, this is where I learned that religiosity and spirituality do work together. And they do coincide. And it's an awesome, awesome event. You see, I feel that there's like a bungee cord. And one end is tied to God and the other end is tied to me. And I've never been dropped so far that I broke my neck and died. And even if I did, I know I'd be in a better place. But the thing is that I learned that God just wants a relationship with me. He wants me talking to him. That's it. He wants me talking to him. And he wants me to share what I've learned here. He wants me to share with other people because I have to give it away to keep it. That's just the way I feel. And again, my personal opinion. Step 12, we practice these principles in all of our affairs. Therefore, not only in Alcoholics Anonymous do I work the 12 steps, I have to learn to work the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous in my job, with my family, in every area of my life, with my friends. I have to learn how to use the principles of this program everywhere. And I also learned that the traditions, this is just for me, the traditions are to the group what the steps are to the individual. And I will tell you, I am grateful for those traditions because they have saved me. Because when my sons walk in the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous, I want this program to be here. So I'll catch you up to date on a few things that have happened since I worked the 12 steps. That man that I was married to, when I had a year of sobriety, he caught this disease of alcoholism, and he got sober, started going to AA, and I thought, wow, okay, this is great. We started dating, found we are much better friends, divorced. And so we divorced, and we stayed very, very good friends. And because my sponsor always said to me, be careful what you say to him. You will have to make an amends. And I heard what she was saying. And so I was careful. And, you know, I had to put, it wasn't our son that was the problem. It was our relationship. And so I didn't want to put anything in between the two. My son, I can gratefully say that my 28-year-old son has never heard me say a bad word about his dad. And I'm very grateful for that. And so anyway, we divorced, stayed friends, everything was good. I had about 3 years of sobriety. I was speaking down at a meeting in Newport Beach and Monday night, and there was a guy who was taking his one-year cake, and one of my friends was there. You know, they were at the meeting, this guy and his wife, and they introduced me to this guy, and then my friend said, hey, he wants your number, and I said, okay, well, you can give it to him, and because he had a year of sobriety, so I did not 13-step him. I'm just saying. So we started dating, and 4 months later, he asked me to marry him. I know, that was quick. Hey, we're alcoholic. So we got married, and just before we got married, we found out that I had another disease besides the disease of alcoholism, and that's hepatitis C. And they wanted to put me on this treatment, and I didn't want to do it before the wedding. So I said, you know, can we just wait for that? And the doctor said, sure, you know, we'll wait till afterwards. So we go through the wedding and everything, and we get back, and I noticed this funny thing on my leg, and I went to the doctor, and the doctor said, I want to take it out. It just doesn't look right. All right, fine. So he sent me to the hospital to get some blood tests, because you always have to do pre-blood tests in California before you have any type of surgery. And the doctor called me the day before my surgery, and I'm thinking, oh, look how special I am. Doctor calls me. I mean, he didn't have his assistant. He called me. And he said, Roseanne, I'm sorry, but I don't think we should do the surgery tomorrow. And I said, why? And he goes, because you're pregnant. I'd gotten pregnant on the honeymoon, no joke. I'm serious. So we said, okay, we'll just wait until later. So after my son was born, he was 6 weeks old, and this thing on my leg was looking really bad now. And I went back to the doctor, and he said, you need surgery. We think it's an aneurysm, and so we really need to get it out now. And I said, okay. So I was in a 6.5-hour surgery the first time, and they couldn't diagnose it, so they sent it to the Mayo Clinic. I thought they did that with everybody. And 7 days later, they came back. God bless you. 7 days later, they came back with a diagnosis of spindle cell sarcoma in my leg, which is a type of cancer. And so they had to go back. They had to wait till my leg healed, and then they had to go back in again. I will tell you that that is the time that this program of Alcoholics Anonymous worked me, because I didn't have anything to give. My cry, my prayer was, God help. That's it. The women of this program brought meals. The cards that I received from the people in this, you know, my friends and everybody while I was going through that tough time, people came over and cleaned my house for me because I couldn't move. And I had a 6-week-old baby. And it was a tough time, I'll tell you. And I just said, okay, God, you're in control. And then the next thing that happened is, you know, we go back in for the second surgery and have that done. And then I have to go on that treatment, this interferon, and went on that twice, and it didn't work. And they said, well, you know, we don't know what's going to happen, and your numbers are going up. But I was asymptomatic. And so I said, well, that's all right. You know, God's got a plan. So a few years later, in 2000, 2002, doctor calls me up and he goes, hey, got this great treatment. I want you to try it. It's perfect for you. So I went on it again. I've been in remission ever since. So the Hep C is really clean. It's been really good. And I've been in remission from the cancer for 20 years now. Yeah. So, you know, it's like, and the funny thing is the doctor said to me, he goes, Roseanne, he goes, I do NBA players, and your leg looks better than any NBA player I've ever done. And I said, yeah, but I know how to take direction. I learned that in Alcoholics Anonymous. And anyway, what happened after that was, you know, life was going on and things were going well. And I went back to work, and I had been an executive secretary for many years. And I had found out that my husband had been doing some side issues for quite a few years. And it was like an earthquake. The epicenter was underneath my feet, and like an 8.0. And he did not want to stop smoking pot. And his behavior was changing. And I, for the next 6 years, I tried to make it work because I didn't want to go through a divorce. And what I realized was I needed to start protecting myself. And there came that point where I had to do something. So in 2006, we split up. And at that time, my son, my second son, who is now 21 years old, he was 14 at the time, he started spiraling out of control. And I said, I am not about to allow this to happen. No way. And so I sent him to a ranch in Utah. So I had to do it because, like, I'm going to teach him the program? I don't think so. You can't teach. You can, but you can't. He didn't like me because of the fact that I was too much like AA. And he has told me, Mom, it was too much. And that's okay that he said that. Now he loves it. So anyway, he ended up, he was in and out and in and out. He was there for 15 months. He came back. He finally graduated from high school. He came here. I finally said, I can't do anything for you anymore. You're on your own. He got sober. He stayed sober for about a year and a half. And then he went back out. And I had to tell him that he couldn't live with me anymore. Because that's what I had to do. I had to protect myself. And he knows that I love him. And he told me, I love you. And I know that you're doing what you have to do, and I have no resentments, you know, and I'm very, very grateful for that. And during that whole time, when I had 20 years of sobriety, it's the hardest time I've ever gone through. I was going through a divorce, didn't have a job, lost my job. I decided what else was going on? All kinds of stuff were going on, you know, through this whole thing. And it was complete turmoil. And it was like, okay, just focus on God. That's what I learned here. Just focus on God. And I'll tell you, some of the things that happened for me were incredible. I mean, you only hear about it in the movies, but truly it happened. A lady called me up and said, how much is your house payment? And I told her, she goes, you know what? You have 20 years of sobriety? I go, yeah. She said, I don't want you to drink. I have a granddaughter who's an alcoholic. I'm giving you a gift of your house payment. And she sent it to me. That just doesn't happen to alcoholics. And so I'm looking for a job, and I'm looking for a job, and I finally find this job. And I'm thinking, I'm listening to God, and he's saying, take this job. It's less money. I had to take a big cut in salary. It's all right. Just take the job. I've been at that job for 6 years. They sent me back to school. I was accepted at UCI at the paralegal program, and I became a litigation paralegal. And I went back to school at 50 years old, and they asked me to be on the advisory board of the UCI paralegal program, and I'm on that board and have been on that board for over 4 years now. And I will tell you, an honor like that just doesn't happen to people like me, but it does happen because we do what we do. We keep it alive. And one of the things that I've learned is that I just lost my train of thought. I'll just end with this last. It's an Indian proverb, and it really sums up how I feel about Alcoholics Anonymous. And it goes like this. If you meet a man and he's hungry, give him a fish, and he can eat for one day. But if you teach him how to fish, he can eat for the rest of his life. That is what Alcoholics Anonymous has done for me. Thanks for letting me share.